Hello, rock and roll rebels, and welcome to another episode of Ramble On with Rosie. We are here in the fine month of March to discuss all things Irish, as I warned y'all, specifically Rory Gallagher. Now, if you check out my Instagram page at Ramble On with Rosie, you're literally getting a Irish song a day and its backstory in a post, because I really like Irish history and Irish music, so this month is my moment to shine. But that aside, discussing Rory today, I literally had a plum fall into my lap because last week, his estate or whatever, released digitally a Cleveland radio broadcast in which Rory had performed in two parts. Now, these had been released in 2020 and in 2021 for Record Store Day on vinyl, but they just got released digitally, and I didn't even know about the other releases because Rory and I weren't talking after 2020 for a while. Not that I was talking to him anyways because he's dead, but my best friend and I had been planning a trip to Ireland in June for the Rory Gallagher Festival up in Ballyshannon near where he was born. In 2020, in June. So as you can imagine, that did not happen, and while I still loved Rory's music, it was painful to hear, because I literally had to buy a new planner that year, because I was like, I had written down all the dates and where I was going to be, so my parents would have a frame of reference, you know, for their internationally traveling daughter, who was just going with one other mid-20s friend. And I was like, I can't look at these for 3 weeks, because for one, I'm at work instead of in Ireland, and two, I just want to burst into tears. So, listening to Rory had a similar effect, so I had to avoid his music for a while, but I'm back on speaking terms. Such a disappointment. I still intend to go to Ireland one of these days. Whether it's to the festival or not, I'm still going to, like, go find his grave and his statue in Dublin and all the other Rory sites I can possibly squeeze in there, because he is one of my favorite guitarists, like second favorite guitarists. Like, top one is Jimmy Page, and then it's Rory, and then probably like Alvin Lee or Stevie Ray Vaughan. So yeah, he's on my Mount Rushmore of guitar players, and I would like to go, you know, see some of the Rory related sites in Ireland whenever I get to doing that international travel thing again. But moving on from my thwarted travel plans to this lovely release of Cleveland Calling, Part 1 and Part 2, which is now on, like, Spotify and all the other places. It was recorded in August of 1972, on August 7th. Now, Spotify mislabeled Cleveland Calling Part 1 and says it was done on WNCR in Cleveland in 1973, except for WNCR changed formats to a country station in January of 1973. And it has part two labeled as 1972, and you can tell from part one, when the DJ says they'll be doing a rock and roll set later with Rory, that they were recorded on the same, you know, day. In fact, they were actually found on a small 7-inch reel, so they were on the same reel. They definitely were recorded in the same day. Spotify just got the year wrong. So, especially because by 1973, he probably would have been working in one or two songs from his latest album, which would not have been Deuce. And when he did these songs, this performance, he had two studio albums out, which were his debut album, Rory Gallagher, and his second album, which is called Deuce. And then he had one live album that had just come out about 4 months prior. It came out in May of 1972. So that's your setting for when this was taking place, and me correcting Spotify because they got the year wrong. He's being interviewed between the songs by a WNCR DJ named Carolyn Thomas. I couldn't find out a whole lot about her other than the fact that she is responsible for a fake news moment of 1972, in which she had some sort of prank caller had called in anonymously to inform the radio station that Richard Nixon had been shot and killed This is 1972, so no, and he never was. So she, of course, reported this horrible news to, you know, the Cleveland listeners, and then, of course, looked really foolish when it came out that Nixon was, in fact, not dead. So that's why you fact-check yourself before you go telling your audience things, especially things of that heavy of an import. So that was the only real thing I could find about this, particular DJ, but she does a really good job of interviewing Rory. Like, it could be argued that occasionally she sort of talks over the end of his sentence, you know, or doesn't quite give him the time to answer, but then Rory is very shy and soft-spoken, and DJs are used to talking over the end of songs and talking non-stop streams for a minute or two between songs. So they're maybe not always the best person to be doing interviews, but she doesn't ever really, like, outright interrupt him. She just sort of thinks he's done speaking when he's not, but, you know, Rory, being soft-spoken, isn't like, oh my gosh, you didn't let me finish my sentence. He's just like, oh yay, we can move on, I can play the next song and not have to talk. But when he does talk, he has really good insights and is informative and just very humble vibes. Like, Rory's humility is pretty much, like, universally acknowledged by anybody who interacted with the man. Like, I'm not sure if demure is quite an appropriate word, especially to apply to a male. Whatever the masculine version of demure is, that's sort of the vibe Rory's got. But in spite of that shyness, the insights he has are really good, and they're on things ranging from how to play harmonica and improve your harmonica skills, because the DJ Carolyn Thomas was learning harmonica at that point, to his thoughts on the English music scene and the treachery of women in blues songs. And so it's really sweet and informative, because, you know, he's talking about how, like, the English musicians aren't quite as into jamming as the ones on the American scene are. And then when he's telling her about harmonica, like, you get the vibe that he would just stop what he was doing right then and there if they weren't on the air and, like, give her harmonica lessons, because he's, like, telling her all the ins and outs of, like, which types of harmonicas do what and how to play them. And Rory is somewhat known for just being able to sort of, like, want to share his knowledge of all things musical with literally anyone. For those of you who are more familiar with Rory Gallagher's career, there is the Irish Tour 74 concert film, which, even if you aren't familiar with Rory, you should still watch. And if you are familiar with Rory, you should have already watched it by now, but if you haven't, go watch it. It's so good. But you get an interview sequence backstage where he's telling the, you know, interviewer or cameraman all about the history of bottleneck playing, and, you know, whether you play it with a glass bottle or if, you know, play it with a steel, you know, slide style. And he's going into great detail on that, and he's kind of doing the same thing with the harmonica. And we owe a very distinctive guitar sound to this tendency Rory had for sharing his musical knowledge with anybody who asked, because a young, scrappy, still in smile Brian May snuck up when Rory was playing the Marquee Club and approached him and asked him for, you know, his musical advice, because Brian was learning guitar at the time. And Rory happily sat and told him, you know, oh, I use this type of amp, you should get that, and this other type of pedal I think he recommended, and, you know, was more than happy to, like, pour out his knowledge to a... Brian was probably somewhere between, like, 17 and 19 at that point. You know, this teenage kid, and he's, like, totally humble about it and was just teaching him, which Brian literally credits Rory for the Queen sound. Like, he's like, if Rory hadn't told me to do those things, you know, that's what helped me find my voice. So, even if you're not a Rory fan or don't know about him, you've probably heard a few Queen songs in your life. And Rory gave the Red Special, which is Brian May's guitar, its voice. Gave Brian his, you know, voice, because Brian doesn't sing, per se, that much in Queen. He's the guitar player, and that guitar has a very distinctive sound. Which part of that is the fact it was custom made by Brian and his dad out of the fireplace mantle, and the other part of that is Rory telling, you know, Brian what the best equipment to use to get the kind of sound he wanted was. So, that side note and example of Rory's just generous teaching ability aside, that's only a taste of... ironic. For those of you not in the joke, Taste was Rory Gallagher's first band's name, inspired by a Guinness advertisement on the floor mats of the bar they were in when they met up. But that aside, getting back to the actual content of the Cleveland Calling sessions, part one and part two, it's... Sorry, I was like, I got distracted on the Brian May train of thought. But anyways, the interview snippets between are really, they give you a very good grasp of, you know, sort of who Rory is. So especially if this is like your first time really hearing about Rory that much, because he isn't talked about that much, partly because he had no real desire to be a commercial success. He wasn't out there releasing singles, which is part of the refreshing thing about his interviews, is that he's not over here turning them into infomercials for his latest album or singles, because for one, he didn't do singles. He got mad even when he was in his first band, Taste, or first major band, rather. He was in show bands and whatnot before that. But his first major original work band of Taste, he got really mad at their manager when he released a single for their works. So he didn't do singles. He was not a commercial act. And so a lot of people have, unfortunately, not heard of him, in spite of him being a phenomenal and very influential guitar player. At least among guitar players and, you know, fans of the British blues boom. Not that he was British. Boy was definitely Irish. Born in the Republic, not in the, branch of Great Britain that is Northern Ireland. So he was born in independent Ireland. He's definitely Irish. Grew up in Cork. But yeah, so, but part of that whole, like, resurgent influence in, I mean, interest in blues that came around in the mid to late 60s in Europe, he was part of that, and Taste was one of those bands. In fact, they performed at the 1971 Isle of Wight Festival. Granted, they disbanded, like, the next day, but they did still perform, which is cool, because the Isle of Wight Festivals were pretty legendary. They were really huge. One of them, I can't remember if it was the 71 one or a later one, whichever one Free performed at both of them too. I'm pretty sure it was the one that Taste was at in 1971, had like 600,000 people in attendance. So it was like crazy big, like bigger than Woodstock big. But anyway, so like they were known, but they just were not commercial. And like I said, that leads to Rory not making his interview snippets into a commercial. But moving on from the interview segments, which are literally just dispersed between the songs, like he plays a song and then Carolyn asks him a few questions and then he plays another song or they comment on the previous song he played, the actual songs he plays are about half and half mixed between original work and blues covers of old bluesman songs. Which is also slightly interesting because you'd think somebody with a live album that just came out and two solo albums would be like playing mostly original work rather than an even half split between the songs that influenced him and his, you know, original compositions. In fact, the first song he does is not one of his. Well, it is, but it isn't. We'll get to that. It's actually a song that was written by Blind Boy Fuller and released in 1938, but it's really Rory's song at this point, because this was one of the songs that took me from being a curious musical explorer to a fan that bought half a dozen albums in one order off of eBay. Like, it's so good. And, because... Slight side backstory here, how I learned about Rory in the first place is completely off the wall, but I've actually learned about a couple different artists this way, which is Pinterest misidentifying photos of musicians, because I had seen a picture that was captioned to be Jimmy Page, and I was like, Jimmy does not own a guitar that looks like that, Because Rory's guitar is notoriously very rough looking. The finish is worn off because he sweated a lot, and according to his brother, he had like really acrid sweat. So it just literally worked as, you know, paint remover on his poor guitar, especially being played as that much in as much as that instrument was. And I was like, Jimmy Page treats his guitars probably better than like most of the people in his life. So like, no, Jimmy's guitar would never look like this. He wouldn't take it out in public if it did. So I was like, because, you know, when a guitar player's head is down and they're looking at their instrument, I was like, that's not Page's guitar. It doesn't quite look right to be Page. I was like, who is this? So I did like a reverse Google image search. And they're like, Rory Gallagher. And I was like, well, who's that dude? So I went and listened to his music and got on the Rory train that I am on and haven't gotten off of, give or take a rest in 2020 and part of 2021 while I recovered. But, like I said, this Pistol Slapper Blues, his version of it, took me from being a curious person chasing a rabbit trail that came from Pinterest to like, I love this dude's guitar playing. Like I said, he's in my top three guitar players. He's on my Mount Rushmore. It's him, Page, Alvin Lee, and Stevie Ray Vaughan. And he's number two to Page. Number three rotates between those others. But it's always Page and Gallagher as one and two. And another slight backstory to the resemblance is that Page is half Irish, so then they've both got dark hair. So it is, they could be cousins, maybe. Maybe they are. But they look like they could be. They're decently resemble each other enough to the point that my dad has mistaken my Jimmy Page poster for being a poster of Rory, because my dad dislikes Page, and so I'm like, you keep thinking that so you don't give me flack about my poster. But moving on from the struggles to the second song that he does, which is I Don't Know Where I'm Going, which is an original Rory song from his second album, Deuce. And it's a really fun song. I like it a lot. Like I said, I'm probably not going to break down the songs as thoroughly as I usually do, because this is more about the overall performance and how good this is. Because, like, honestly, I love how they just released this, because it's a great way to introduce people to Rory. You get some interviews, you get an idea of who he is as a person a little bit, and then you get some snippets of his music in an acoustic setting, and then a little bit later in the part two, in a more electrified band rock and roll setting. And I'm not saying either of these are like the absolute best example of Rory live or in studio, because they're radio recordings, so it's sort of a mix of both, so it's not quite the right vibe for either, but you get an idea of how good of a player he is and the kind of songs that he does. So it's a really great, like, foot in the door introduction to Rory Gallagher if you haven't listened to him before. So highly recommend these again to all newcomers to the Rory Gallagher fandom. Really good. I'm so glad that they released this in time for me to do a bunch of rambles about Rory and hopefully introduce some people to him that don't know him before. Don't know about him from before. But, so like I said, the second song was off of his second album, Deuce, and then he does another cover, which was Gypsy Woman, which is a song that was written by Muddy Waters in the late 40s, about 5 years after he came to Chicago, and only a couple years after he started, like, playing electric more. This particular version is acoustic, but I think the Muddy Waters one was, try saying that five times fast, electrified, because he had gone electric by then. And the next song was Out of My Mind, which a Rory original. Like I said, he practically perfectly alternates his originals and his covers. And it's also off of Deuce, and it's one of my favorite songs, not just off of Deuce, and not just in this performance, but overall. It's very fun, it's pretty, it's whimsical, but it's also still got that undertone of, like, blues-infused punch to it. So it's not a weak song, while it is a little bit more light and airy than the typical, like, bluesy numbers that he, you know, tends to play the most of. And then the next song is a cover of sorts. It's a traditional song dating back to, there's some debate, sometime around the late 1700s. early 1800s at the latest. It was popular in like all the English-speaking European and American countries, so Canada, America, Ireland, Scotland, England, Wales, etc. It came out on a posthumous release in 2003 called Wheels Within Wheels, but between this performance in 1972 and 2003, unless you had a bootleg, you wouldn't have heard Rory play this song, unless he maybe played it live, or you had a bootleg of a live performance. So I imagine, like, for the people who heard this radio broadcast and then never hearing this song again, if they'd really liked it, they'd be like, did I imagine that song? Like, it's interesting for me as somebody who's more or less of the technological age. I'm old enough that I did have cassette tapes a little bit as a kid. You know, I turned 30 this year. But just think about somebody, like, hearing a song and then not being able to just look it up on the internet and find it again and have to wait 30 years to be confirmed that you didn't imagine a particular song to exist by a particular artist. It's an interesting perspective. But, so that aside, the song The Cuckoo, there's a lot of versions of it that do exist and were recorded. So you could at least know that the song was real, even if you didn't know whether Rory did it or not. Like, it's been done by artists ranging from Taj Mahal to Peter, Paul, and Mary. It's been done many times. Of course, it is, like, 300 years old, so it's a lot of time for a lot of people to do the song. The next song, also a cover, it's a Big Bill Brunsey song that was released in, called Banker's Blues. Now, Big Bill Brunsey, I learned, had many aliases. He was like Big Bill Johnson and a half dozen other things. And when I went to the Delta Blues Museum in Clarksdale, Mississippi, they had some really interesting quotes by him. And ever since reading those, I'm like, I need to go look into this dude. So he's like on my, you know, like if I had a pin board of like a cork board of artists I need to look up, he'd be on that cork board of like look up and find out more about this dude and listen to more of his music. So I'm like, this is Rory reminding me I need to listen to Big Bill Brunsey one of these days. And then he does on another original song called Should Have Learned My Lesson, which is also off the Deuce album. And it sounds so authentically homegrown blues that you would probably guess it to be written by somebody like Muddy Waters or one of the other older bluesmen, more than you would some of the songs that were actually written by them off of this performance. Like, it's a really authentic blues vibe to Should Have Learned My Lesson. Especially in this performance, but even when it's on the album, you're like, this seems like it should be, you know, Howlin' Wolf or, you know, just one of those older blues musicians. I don't quite know. I'm not quite as familiar with the actual blues musicians enough to, like, define who had which sound. So if I'm off base, please forgive me. I know some songs by most of them, but I don't know enough to really be like, well, that's so-and-so because it sounds like this. But that being the case, and then this is that Should Have Learned My Lesson is the second to last song, and in between it and the final song, a couple other DJs come in to sort of say hi and ask Rory a few questions. There's a brief moment of tension because one of the DJs is Irish is English, and it affords Rory, who's Irish, an opportunity to sort of make a little bit of humor into the situation, because the English DJ asks almost with a air of superiority, well, what's an Irish lad doing in America? And being a bit of a smartass, even though he's shy, Rory's like, yes, I'm here to collect bombs for the cause. He's like, no, I'm on holiday. It's like, no, I'm touring. It's sort of like his very polite, soft-spoken way of going, I'm a musician. What the hell do you think I'm doing in this country? Touring, obviously. But his very polite, tongue-in-cheek way of going, stop being an idiot and ask me a real question. It's like the closest to irritated he gets, but, you know, tensions between English and Irishmen being what they were in that time. Yeah, fair enough to say, even though Rory never got terribly political. he's smart enough to avoid that. He was too concerned with music, too. But and then the final song is Blow Wind Blow, which is another Muddy Waters cover. And it was originally done in 1953, so it's a 20-year-old song at this point. And then you have the break, and you come up to part two of the Cleveland Calling sessions, whatever you want to call them. And part two, he starts out with a song called Messin' with the Kid, which is, I always thought was a Rory original when I heard it, because it has his vibe, but it was actually a Mel London song that was written for and recorded by Junior Wells. Junior Wells had the nickname of the Kid. In fact, Junior Wells' kid sort of inspired the song. So the Kid's kid being sassy when Mel London came over to pick Junior up for a recording session and was like, it's not 9 o'clock yet, you can't be messing with the Kid. I just find it funny that somebody's child was calling them the Kid. Even if it was their nickname, it just seems weird. I'm like, don't you call your parent mom or dad? No, they're the Kid. But anyways, that was the backstory for this song, which Rory covers so well that I thought it was his. In fact, the song is such a exemplary piece of blues work and influential that it's actually in the Blues Hall of Fame. Then it's a Rory original next, which is Used to Be, also off of Deuce. And it's a clever song. Whenever I do the episode that I'm probably going to do this month on Rory's magnificent songwriting abilities, I probably include this one because it's just his clever weaving of the English language, I feel, gets overlooked because of his phenomenal guitar playing. And I'm like, I want to talk about both because he was a great songwriter. And then he goes and performs Should Have Learned My Lesson again, but here with the full band, so it's not just an acoustic number. Like, all the songs on Cleveland Calling Part 1 are acoustic, and here it's not. And then the next song is unoriginal. It's called Laundromat, which is just one of the most unique songs lyrically that I think I've ever heard. And it was partially inspired by the fact that he had an apartment he was living in had a on-site laundromat. And in order to not disturb people with his, you know, music practice, be it of his guitar or his saxophone or harmonica, he'd go down to the laundromat and play. And granted, the setup for the song is different than that. He's more like down there because I think the premise is more like his girlfriend kicked him out, in the song at least, but you can tell that he probably, you know, the observation of the characters surrounding him in the laundromat probably came from actually hanging out in the laundromat for hours on end practicing his instruments. And Laundromat is such a, you know, quintessential Rory tune. It's the first song off of his first solo album, so it's definitely like a big time Rory track. And then he does Pistol Slapper Blues again, and he does it acoustic here as well, so you can compare the two versions and decide which one you like best, but they're both acoustic. And he also does the Banker's Blues again, and this time it's acoustic, but it's also got like some complimentary piano playing too, which gives it a little bit more of like a ragtimey feel, but the piano playing isn't even throughout the song, it's just sort of near the end. And then he closes with In Your Town, which is also off of Deuce, and it's just one of the most energetic and driving songs in Rory's early discography. Like, it's really hard hitting and like kind of song you'd drive 80 miles down the highway to. Very punchy song. So that those are the songs that he performs in the Cleveland Calling performance. Performance that he did for Cleveland Radio. And I highly recommend them. Now that they're digitally available, you can probably find them on Apple Music or Spotify or probably even on YouTube. So also, if you're on YouTube, I highly recommend checking out the interview on Rory Gallagher's YouTube channel, where they're interviewing Brian May, because you can get a fuller picture of what I was trying to tell you earlier about the influence that Rory had on that very quintessential Queen sound that comes from Brian May's guitar. So, that's your recommended Rory reading for the week. Not that I'm a school teacher or anything, and I will share more fun facts about the soft-spoken Irishman in next week's episode, unless something really stupendous happens between now and then. But I can't imagine anything being more important than talking about Rory during Irish Heritage Month. Something really big would have to happen. But hopefully, nothing that big happens, because that would probably be a tragedy. And I don't need any more tragedies in my life. None of us do. But till next time, just have a great week. Be kind to each other and rock on.